afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 227th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Caroline Hadilaksano, who was raised in Surabaya, Indonesia, until the age of 12. Surabaya is a major port city of 3.4 million people, and it has a rich trading history with coffee, tobacco, and sugar, and is a financial hub of Indonesia. The average daily temperatures in Surabaya range between 79 and 82 degrees Fahrenheit year-round. That's consistent. Youngest in her family, Caroline left home at the age of 12 and moved to LA to be with extended family. She later lived in New York City before moving to Maine to attend the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies. And then she stayed. So glad to have you in Portland, Caroline. Welcome to New Mainers Speak.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
I bet the people you run into don't know a ton about Indonesia, and I was curious what you wish every American understood about your home country of Indonesia.
I guess every time I tell people I'm from Indonesia, the main response that I get is that I love Bali, or like I've been to Bali. So I think that's the thing that people know the most is from, you know, just like seeing pictures or like Eat, Pray, Love. But I guess my experience of Indonesia, what do I want people to know? I guess that there's a lot of diversity in the culture, and I have to kind of explain to people usually that I'm from Indonesia. I was born in Indonesia, but I'm actually Chinese. And when I say that to people, they're like, "Oh, that look. I guess you look Chinese," and that's because there's so Chinese people are one of the, we're like a significant minority in Indonesia, so there are a lot of Chinese people in Indonesia. And yeah, I think that is kind of like the biggest thing that people kind of don't really think about, that, you know, you go to Indonesia and there's like, oh, there's a lot of Chinese people. And that's kind of like what I consider myself as.
And I imagine in Indonesia, you don't need a ton of clothes when your whole variety of weather goes between 79 and 82 degrees.
Well, you know what is kind of funny is that at least where I grew up, or in my childhood, we mostly hang out, like we go from air-conditioned places to air-conditioned places. So like not in school, but usually when you're like home, you go to like the car and then you go to the mall. So there's a lot of places in Indonesia where it's just air-conditioned. So I think that is kind of something like kind of throws people off, because in Maine, like most places don't really have air conditioning. So when it's hot, it's just hot all the time. So I think, the air conditioning makes people kind of, it's harder to get used to the heat and the humidity.
Yes, humidity will make it feel like a lot more. Can you paint us a picture of your daily life in Surabaya as maybe a 10-year-old girl? What might a typical school day have looked like, felt like there?
So I went to a private Catholic school when I was in Surabaya. So like school starts, I think like around 7. So we would wake up at like 6 and get ready for school. And then we, you know, get dropped off. And I think for me personally, like my childhood is very, it revolves a lot around academics. Like I studied a lot because my mom was very strict about that stuff. So I would like, and we go to school Monday through Saturday, so we don't have 2-day weekend. So when I moved to the US, like the 2-day weekend was like amazing. So we go to school 6 days a week, and then usually when I get home from school during the school days, my mom would have a tutor come in and help me study for tests, or, you know, preparing for whatever's coming up. And then I would do homework and then eat dinner. And that's kind of like my daily routine growing up is a lot of studying.
I compare that to an American child's school day, and it's quite different.
I mean, yeah, I guess when I moved to the U.S., I didn't, I mean, I still studied a lot, but it does, I don't know. I think I learned how to, like, keep myself accountable, just because I think growing up in that kind of structure, it just makes me, it made me, like, being used to structure in my day. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go home and I'm going to do this.
Did everybody have tutors come to their house after school? Was that just for an advantage?
I don't think so. I think, like for my, even my brother, he didn't really, like, I just remember growing up, like I'll be, you know, like after school, I'll be like studying and then doing homework. And then I watch, you know, I can see, like I would peek from the room that I'm like sitting in with my tutor or even like by myself. And I can see my brother like playing like Nintendo or something and or like watching TV. And I'll be just like so jealous.
Did you ask your mom about that? Why you had a tutor and he didn't?
Honestly, I think it's just because my, like, I think my brother just didn't care as much about school. And he's one of those people who are like, he's just so chill. I mean, he's really smart. And he doesn't have to try as hard. So he doesn't really study hard and then he'll get like a B minus and he's totally fine. Like a B minus is totally great for him. I think my mom just like wanted me to like be like the best, like number one. I don't know. Like there's a lot of being like in a private Catholic school, there was like a lot of competition in terms of like ranking and grades and stuff like that. And I think that's just kind of like the culture that I grew up in and not necessarily like, I wouldn't say that that's like an Indonesian thing. It was mostly more like a my own childhood.
Yeah, pretty intense. But it sounds like she put her chips on you. She saw you as the academic front runner.
I think she just worries about me a lot.
Oh, mothers. When we were talking before, yeah. I just love that you said boredom is a precious thing. And I kept thinking about that. And this is an idea that might come in handy for people sheltering in place these days. Can you tell us how your boredom led you to your profession eventually?
Yeah. So, you know, like being a nerd growing up, like I think it's not surprising that, you know, I had a very like lonely childhood, and that's kind of like, you know, if I think of like my religious upbringing or whatever, like I think it is loneliness. And you know, I have a sibling, but like I don't really play with him because we're into very different things. And you know, like being like studying all the time, like I didn't really have a ton of friends at school. You know, I pretty much just like kept to myself. And then when my sister moved away to the US, I moved into her room because I was sharing a room with my brother. So when I moved into her room, I was finally able to like go through her stuff because like when like growing up, she's always like, don't touch my stuff. And like, and always, I always like covet her stuff so much because she has like Barbies and just like really cool things. So finally, like, some of the stuff that she left behind, I was like going through it and I found her watercolor set. And I think I was around, I think I was in third grade at the time. And I just started like playing with it. And, you know, I really, like, I just kind of took to it. You know, I didn't really have anything else to do. And I found like, oh, this thing is really fun. And I just kept playing with it and using it. And then, you know, when I ran out of that watercolor set, I went to my mom and I asked her if I can have more, and she bought me more, and she just kept, you know, she kept buying more for me when I ran out. And it's just kind of like the thing that I do to like occupy myself.
You finally had a chance at the forbidden contraband.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then your mom saw that you were using them wisely. I love your art. When I asked you to be on this program originally, and at the time we were expecting a class of Dartmouth students to be witnessing the show live in the studio that day, you said, "Wow, that sounds terrifying. So I'll do it." Tell me more about that gumption. Where do you get the guts? Or is it the mindset to tenaciously power through things that originally sound scary to you?
I guess I don't know when I consciously started doing that, but I guess, you know, just like looking at my childhood, like, you know, I moved to the U.S. by myself. Like, my parents stayed behind, and they didn't move with me. So, and I started school. I went into middle school, and I didn't really speak English at the time. And it was just, I was just kind of like pushed into this situation where, like, well, I guess you just have to learn English somehow. Like, I guess in the beginning, doing the scary things is not by choice. But I don't know, I guess eventually, and I would say, like, it's probably in my late 20s when I started, you know, like, if, because I feel like I'm scared of a lot of things, even things that are not like such a big deal to a lot of people, like, you know, like socializing and like talking in public, you know, talking in a group of people, just, you know, things that seem so mundane. So I realized that, like, if I just don't do things that scare me, then I would probably not do anything in my life. So I kind of made a promise to myself that if it sounds scary, then I have to do it.
Yeah, you build up your courage muscle.
Yeah.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest is Caroline Hadilaksono, who grew up in Surabaya, Indonesia, moved alone to LA at the age of 12, and now is a designer, illustrator and storyteller, and so much more. She lives and works in Portland, and you can see the full range of her work on her website, hadilaksono.com, H-A-D-I-L-A-K-S-O-N-O. Your work is gorgeous. I'm especially impressed by the book Surprise that you wrote and illustrated for Scholastic Press. And I wondered if you could describe your home studio for me so I can picture you working on those beautiful images that I've seen that you've created.
So I worked on that. I worked on that book when I was still living in New York. So before I moved to Maine, and up until I moved to Maine, my studio has basically been my bedroom. So, like, I can touch my bed from where I'm working. And I don't really recommend it. But, you know, that's kind of what I've had for almost like a decade, basically. I just been working in the same space as, you know, where I sleep. So, you know, in my apartment in Brooklyn, where I made the book Surprise, you can, like, you know, there's like, you go in and there's like a little, like a, I don't know, like an IKEA table with a rolly chair. And that's kind of like my workspace. And then next to the bed is my full-size bed. And I have, I've installed one of those shelves on the wall to hold all of my books. And I've learned to work in small spaces, and like, even my setup is pretty mobile. Like, I work with a laptop, and I have a tablet that is kind of the size of my laptop. So and like, all my painting watercolor set, I use like a travel watercolor set, so everything fits in like a backpack, and if I need to go somewhere, I can work from wherever. So that's kind of like, something that for a long time I thought, like, oh, it would be nice to like get a bigger like IMAX screen or like a bigger tablet. But I thought, well, I don't want to get used to like a big setup, because then I wouldn't be able to work on the smaller more like nimble setup. So that's kind of like where I am right now.
That's amazing. I think very few people have an office they could put in their backpack, especially artists with all the supplies that go with. So you've been working from home for a long time. Any tips for success for those of us who have just started working from home in the past, say, a couple weeks?
I would say, you know, people always tell me, like, when I tell them that I'm a freelancer, they're like, oh, you know, it's great, you can make your own hours and that kind of stuff. But, like, I work 9 to 5, and that's something that I'm pretty strict about. And I think it's not only good for getting things done, but it's also good for your own, like, mental health. Because I know, especially, like, having my studio in my bedroom, that it's really hard to stop working, especially when you're working on a laptop. Like, you can just, like, open your computer and, you know, you're, like, you're watching Netflix, but you can also, like, send that email. So there's, like, there's no physical boundary with work anymore. So I think having, like, being really, like, strict about the timing. So, like, whatever you want your start time to be, like, if you're, like, not a morning person, then, like, start at 10 or 11 or whatever. But, like, start at the same time every day, and then and end at the same time. And the ending part is always harder for me, because especially if I'm working on whatever, like, if I'm in the middle of something, you just don't want to, like, leave it. And I tend to be... I'm getting better at it, but I tend to just, like, well, I don't have any plans. I'm not going anywhere. So I'm just going to work until, like, 8 or 9 p.m. So what I've done in the past that kind of helps with that is make plans with people, because then you have to stop. And I guess now you can't really do that, but maybe, like, make there's my friends and I have been doing a lot of, like, video chatting. So we make plans to video chat and meet online. So.
Oh, that's great. Much of your creative work is done alone, but you also like to balance your life with more interactive projects as well as meetings with friends after work. That's what led you to audio storytelling, which brought you eventually to the Salt Institute in Portland, Maine. What is it about audio storytelling that drew you away from your creative visual designing into a world of sound?
Well, while I was working as an illustrator, I listened to so much podcast. I was working like 12-hour days at one point, because I was working full time and then I was working on the book. So, like, the book surprise was, like, I worked on that while I had a full time job. So I was just working really long days, and, you know, I'm sitting there and I needed something to listen to. I listened to 12 hours a day of podcasts, and that was for, like, after, like, a couple of years, there was a show that I listened to, and I remember, without getting too much into the story, like, I remember a quote that this person said, that audio is the medium that I consume the most, and it moves me like no other medium can. And I remember I was, like, drawing when I was listening to that podcast. And then I remember, like, all of a sudden, like, tears were just, like, rolling down my face. And I was like, what's happening? So, you know, I kind of stopped drawing. And then I thought, like, I probably should investigate this more. So I, you know, I thought about it, and I was like, wow, it's like, I feel like that sentence resonated with me so much, that, like, it is the medium that I consume the most, and it does move me like no other medium can. So I did some research, and, you know, I found out about SALT, and I realized that, you know, like, when I was looking into the program, it sounded so scary, because it's completely out of my, you know, comfort zone. Like, I'm the kind of person who stay in my cave, my art cave, you know, drawing by myself for 12 hours a day. And then, you know, here I'm, you know, going to a program where I am expected to reach out to people, do interviews, cold calling people, and being a journalist type of person, basically, which is something that I have no idea how to be. And but like deep down, I know that it's like one of those things that I want to get better at. And like, I feel like being able to do those things will help me grow as a person.
So you think, wow, that sounds terrifying. I'll do it.
Yeah. So these days, I feel like I get my inspiration from the people that I work with at Spindlework. And I only go there once a week. And I go in as a volunteer because I ask them if I, you know, on their website, they have a call for teaching artists. And I was like, oh, that sounds like something that would be really fun to do, because I've been following the works that come out of Spindleworks. And Spindlework is this organization that work with adults with mental disabilities out in Brunswick. And, you know, like the work that comes out of there is just so amazing. And I feel like I go in every week and they teach me so much. There's this one lady who is like teaching me to do embroidery and fiber arts. And hopefully when I get to go back in again, I can return the favor and teach them, or not even like teaching is like even not the right word. It's just like, show them some watercolor stuff or even like do audio projects, because I know they work on animation stuff too. So yeah, I think
that sounds like such a perfect fit for you. To go play with art with people who really just dive right in.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that they inspire you.
Yeah, they do. They're just, I mean, you know what it is because they're fearless. Like, they don't even have a concept of like, oh, I'm not an artist. I shouldn't, you know, I don't know how to do this. Because I feel like everyone is an artist. Like, everyone wants to create. You know, whether it's art or food or whatever form of expression that they do, like everyone wants to make, and they get that, and they have no inhibitions of, you know, something in their head telling them, well, yeah, but I'm not an artist, I can't draw. So.
Perfect. People always bring about narrative closure. You know, why do you like going there? Because they're uninhibited and you always have to make yourself, and then you like going there because they just do it. They don't even know they're supposed to tell themselves they're not good.
Yeah.
I love it. It's beautiful symmetry and it's poetic. So March is Women's History Month, which I like to recognize. And just as a total aside, I'd like to suggest that we nominate April to be Men's History Month. But on a separate note, when I asked you whose work you admire, you shared several women with me, Jillian Tamaki and Eleanor Davis. And I wonder, what is it that these women do that you value so much?
Well, both of those people, they are comic book artists, which means they are really amazing drawers. And so like their craft is amazing, and you should check out their work. But I think I also love their work because they don't only make visual art, like they make stories, and they write comic books, and so they work in kind of like two medium, like they master the craft of drawing and also like the craft of writing and putting that together. And I feel like that's something that I admire a lot, and it's something that I didn't really learn in school. Like, I went to art school and they teach you a lot about the craft, like how to use paint and watercolor and whatnot, but we never really got into the part of, you know, like, okay, how do you tell a story, which is why like Salt to me was really like, it drew me because I was drawn to Salt because, you know, I think that was the part of my education, in like my art education, that was like missing.
You saw it in them. Mm-hmm. Here's to all the fabulous role models out there that have inspired us along the way. Caroline, you are industrious, beautifully expressive, and a deep thinker about things that connect us all to one another. I wish you endless sources of inspiration and success with your career. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you all for listening. If you'd like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Caroline has selected for us. Can you tell us why you chose this song?
Oh, yeah. So the song that I picked is by Las Cafeteras, and they are a band that I'm new to them, actually. Like, someone told me about them recently because they were supposed to have a concert yesterday I think it was like Port City Blues, but obviously it got canceled. So I thought, well, I didn't get to go to the concert. I want to listen to them anyway. And I love this rendition of Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. And I love that song anyway, just because I feel like, I don't know, I feel like when people play it, it sounds kind of cheesy, but like I think the sentiment behind the song is like, it's good to remember, you know, it's like we all belong to this place.
Beautiful. This land is your land.